Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Caldwell. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Hey, I am here with Katie Rubino, our co-author for this fantastic book, You Are an IP Company. And listen, today's topic is all about why most entrepreneurs miss their IP, like why they literally just don't even see it ever. And Katie, you've been in the law practice for how many years do you think now?
Oh, gosh. I guess close to maybe 10 years now.
Awesome. Awesome. And do you ever put it this way? Do you ever have a client who comes in who sees all their IP, or is it like most of the clients see more always after meeting with you?
Definitely more after. I think a big part of it is that when you're ingrained in the technology every day, you don't think that maybe these small tweaks are really that novel or that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, a lot of my job is educating people on where there is IP because they might not recognize it. And, you know, a lot of times we like to tell people, and Keegan even wrote an article last month, I think, in Entrepreneur Magazine, called Patent the Boring Stuff, because that's really those small kind of boring things that seem insignificant. A lot of times those drive the most valuable innovations.
Interesting. I see it right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show people this so that they, I'm glad you referenced it. I did not read this one. So Patent the Boring Stuff, and it was an entrepreneur. But it sounds like Keegan was, definitely quoted in it. And that a lot of companies just want to patent the sexy stuff. But it's really, you know, I've even heard the Amazon, you tell me, I heard that the Amazon one-click buy was like IP when it first came out because it was so innovative and unique. Did you ever hear anything about that?
Yeah. That patent, actually, it's one of the most valuable patents Amazon ever held. So when e-commerce websites were first getting off the ground, Amazon patented that one-click purchase option when you're putting something in a shopping basket.
Wow.
And then what they were able to do is, you know, anybody looking to come in to put that onto their website had to take a license through their patent. And so that was really, sounds kind of boring. It sounds even maybe silly to patent it, but that was one of the most valuable patents. And that one actually, if you can believe it, that patent expired, I think last year, the 20-year term was up. And so now that technology has gone into the public domain, but it's really fascinating to think about something like that. So simple.
Well, you know, let's talk about this because let's talk about drugs. I know you were in pharmacy prior to coming in, and we learn about that in the book. But, you know, I have a prescription right now that cost $900. Okay. And it sounds ridiculous. And I'm not even sure if the insurance pays for it all the time. And it's not critical. It's not like I need the insurance. You know, it's not like I need it to. It's like for skin, like a rash or something, you know, and it's like $900 and it sounds crazy. And it is pretty crazy to the consumer. And hopefully insurance pays for things like that. But on the, you know, on the front end, you look at that and you're like, oh, my gosh, these people are greedy and crazy. And what the heck, you know, this company. And maybe that's true. But the reality is once you know medicine, that medicine, which again, I can take it or leave it because it's not essential, but some medicines for certain people are life or death. Mm-hmm. And it might have taken that company millions and millions and millions of dollars of investment to discover the cure. And so, like, where do we end up justifying that about, like, passing it on to the consumer? But in reality, from a corporate standpoint, it took a lot of money to get that technology. Where do you land on all that?
Yeah, it's tough because I think now I saw a statistic. It takes about $1 billion to get a drug to market. So
$1 billion.
So it's a real investment. And it's sad because so many drugs fail. It looks promising, right? They do some animal studies. It looks safe. And then they administer it in humans and it maybe has no activity or it just becomes toxic fast. But so there's a lot of, you know, drug failure. And so a lot of companies that take off, then they, you know, abruptly, you know, are closing because there's so much at stake.
Yeah.
And so it's a balancing act, but I, you know, having been on the other side of it, working with the customers and patients with the insurance companies and the pricing of it. And, I totally understand where you're coming from because it's very frustrating too, because it's something, you know, a simple issue like you have, you should be able to get just something that can treat it, fix. And that's also kind of reasonably priced too.
Yeah. To me, it's like, it's not a life or death situation. So honestly, I don't even fulfill the, I don't even fill the prescription a lot of times because it's, you know, it's more of a cosmetic thing, but I know some people have legit, like, life or death, they need to take a pill every day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it gets into a whole conversation about how do we reward innovative design and entrepreneurial efforts that is discovering solutions to real problems, and what is the compensation. But let's even take Instant IP. I mean, Instant IP has taken me a bunch of money. But I even tell my students, I was teaching yesterday and they were at, some of those students are choosing Instant IP for their final project to do a project on. Like, I didn't tell them they need to do that. They're, you know, I gave them choices and they're like, oh, we want to do Instant IP. So they were interviewing me and I told them how much money all of it cost with patents and blockchain and all this stuff. And they're like, wow. And I said, you know what? That's not even the worst part. The worst part is 3 years of my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, money's money, but like 3 years of my life. But I love it. I love Instant IP. I think it's so cool. I think it's going to, like, set entrepreneurs free. But at the same point, now it's kind of like all profit, you know? And let's talk about that, Katie, for any entrepreneur who, like, has so much heavy lifting to get something to the point where now it's marketable. And let's just say that they do hit the lottery and now it's worth $10 million, $100 million. Like, should they be compensated for that?
Yeah, that's a tough question. You know, I think certainly that's part of the whole entrepreneurial goal, right? You want to have success. You want to kind of reach that. So, you know, I think on one side, obviously people want to be able to put in the work and get the reward of that. And I think it's interesting to see how a lot of companies can kind of position their intellectual property to help them extract a lot of value for some sort of event like that too.
You know, I'm meeting with a team later today who's developed a cast, a streaming app for the phone that's actually going to save, I can't go into all the detail, but I'll go into some. It's going to save repair people that come to your house that used to have to come to your house and spend a call, you know, a service call, $70 just to, like, look at your appliance. And it's going to actually solve that issue. So they're meeting with me to talk about Instant IP as the first layer and fast layer. And they know a patent's probably down the road, but like we've talked about a lot of times, like, that's a big lift when you're a startup, and capital's just hard, you know? So I am geeking out helping them to be like, look, just get the thing rolling, start the process, you know, and then I'm going to probably send him to you. I told Nick, I'm like, Nick, you better be ready, man. Cause you know, there's going to be a lot of people I'm referring to you, because I do think it's a funnel, you know. And I, and by the way, Katie, your team was awesome to tell people on Instant IP, the default now is hidden. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, Jameson said, look, make the app default as hidden smart contract versus public to protect the trade secret and to not start the clock in motion for 1 year. Talk about that process really quick of the 1 year, because now everybody does a smart contract, it's hidden. And then they have to press a button that pops up and it's what says, warning, you're about to go public, which means you're going to abdicate or give away your right to a trade secret. Is that something you want to do? Talk about that logic, because I thought that was a genius addition to the app.
Yeah, that's a good point. So in the United States, we are kind of lucky because we have what's called this 1 year grace period. So if you publicly disclose your idea for a patent publicly, that could be, you know, through giving a presentation, publishing, just talking to someone else about it. Yep. That starts this 1 year time clock of when you have to file your patent. Otherwise, you'll waive your ability to do so. Mm-hmm. And in most other countries, any kind of public disclosure is an absolute bar to patentability. So what Carrie's talking about with Easy IP is Instant IP. Sorry, gosh, not enough coffee today.
That's all good. It's all good.
What it is that when you upload your file, automatically is set to private mode.
Yes.
So that you don't have that public disclosure issue, and what you're uploading is kind of confidential to just you can see and know what's in there.
I love it. I love it so much, because the day will come where you'll have to maybe defend it. And if somebody else comes alongside and says, look, we had that first, you know, you can then disclose it in a court of law and be like, no, actually we had it. But I think it also gives the entrepreneur control to say, look, let's run ahead and patent this thing, but they almost can do it on their terms. You know what I'm saying? Instead of this, I feel like the timing now, because it remains hidden, allows them to like decide. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it gives them some optionality to decide. You know, it's when you have trade secrets, it's always a balancing act of, do we want to continue to maintain this as a secret, or do we want to move ahead and patent this? So it's always kind of this balancing act of figuring out what are we going to continue to maintain a trade secret and what are we going to move forward with patenting?
Yeah. And I mean, in the book, I was blown away. I did not know that Dr. Pepper has a trade secret in two different safes, part one and part two, half one and half two. And it makes sense though. I mean, they surpassed Pepsi as the second most popular soda. Pop, soft, you know, whatever you want to say. I mean, think about it. We see on the football, the Dr. Pepper halftime show, you know, like Dr. Pepper is huge, and they decide that we're going to make it a trade secret, keep it one, and then split the recipe in two different safes. I mean, is that a little over the top? Or do you think
it's very common? Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with such proprietary information that a lot of times how you can really kind of help with confidentiality, because the whole driving factor behind a trade secret is that it has to be kept secret.
Yep.
The moment it's not a secret, then that protection ceases to exist. So a lot of times companies, you know, number one way to maintain that is through employee contracts of having some confidentiality agreements, about anybody working on trade secret information. And then there's also usually some language if somebody leaves, they can't disclose the trade secrets that they learned. And then also kind of ways to have the knowledge be spread out amongst the staff so that no one person knows all of it, right? We only know one little part that we work on. And then also having these physical mechanisms in place through safes and locks and things to keep it physically locked up so that very few people have access to.
That is hot. Well, and I'm so glad that we used Caldwell because, you know, you can see even on the app, there's a private view and there's a public view, you know, with all the ideas. And then what we did, Katie, is we even put on security. I'm not going to show it because it's got my phone number, but there's a two-factor authentication, which I'll just say this. You can probably see account security, I think. But now, so like now, if somebody's assistant is working on this and they have access to it, you know, there's a two-factor authentication where it has a live six-digit verification that goes to the owner's cell phone. You know, so like we even thought we got to keep this thing massively secure. So we tried to, you know, we don't have safes that were in, but we've even in the app, we're like, man, we got to lock this thing down. And that was actually part of the reason, Katie, when people say, well, can we get your app on the App Store? We're like, no, you can't. And I think at first people think, what? But there's a way to put it on your phone as a icon. That's pretty simple. So, you know, like there it is on my, you know, boom. But we didn't want Apple being in the middle. I mean, we're talking about people's IP and we didn't want Apple or some third party being in the middle of like knowing people's IP. Do you think that was a good feature to kind of keep Apple or any other third party out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think these days, anything that's electronic, there's questions of security, right? Especially we're seeing every day on the news all these hacking scandals and things. So kind of the less eyes that have visibility on it, the better, right? Because there always is that risk of things getting hacked and tapped into that we don't want to happen.
You remember that Coca-Cola Pepsi war thing? I saw an article recently that I believe it was Coca-Cola. Some former employees got the trade secret and went to Pepsi. I don't know if you saw this. It was a decade or so ago, but they went to Pepsi and said, look, we're going to disclose the trade secret to you for a fee. And Pepsi told on them. Did you hear about this?
Vaguely, yeah.
So Pepsi was like, we're not doing that. And they actually got the two people busted. And I thought that's pretty interesting because, I mean, that's like IP war.
Yeah. Well, the thing is too, you know, like if Pepsi had taken that information, then there's some liability for them too. So when something like that happens, it is, you know, a smart move to not engage and to go tell the other company, because otherwise, you know, you're going to get your company roped into it and just cause a whole cascade.
Yeah. It seems like a shortcut, but it could have taken down, it could have taken down Pepsi.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it goes back to the why, Katie, and we start out the book with the why. I want to show people because you have your why, and I'm glad you actually share your why in the book about helping entrepreneurs. I think you call it like unlock the value. I love that term, unlock the value. But here's my why, Katie. I'll shrink it down a little bit. But, you know, my why for this whole book and partnering with you and everything is that, you know, it's not like I don't like money, but I've never been somebody massively motivated by money. I love to get ideas out in the world. And I think that ideas change the world. And because of that, they're valuable. But because they're valuable, anytime you have something valuable, someone is tempted to steal it. And if people steal IP, then I think I've seen this thing happen. I think Dan Sullivan talks about this from Strategic Coach, that it actually messes up the entrepreneur's confidence. You know, if you know that what you're, it's like the drug example. If you know you're working on a drug and you're spending $1 billion, but somebody can just walk in and take all your work, and like, you know, not to talk about socialism and capitalism, but it kind of like eliminates all desire. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if someone can just come in and take that knowledge and all of that time and effort you've put into it, that really will kind of discourage people from innovating. And also It really does affect their confidence, because then they just don't feel that anything they make is going to be safe or really has value there.
Yeah. And we see that it doesn't work. I mean, if you have a structure where people are not rewarded for taking personal and financial risk, it kind of like shuts down all motivation. And so then the world doesn't change. So how do we get past that? Protect your ideas today through patents, copyrights, trademarks, trade secrets, instant IP, so that you can start changing your world. So do you like that flow? I mean, I woke up one morning and that kind of like just came to me. But do you feel like that fits you? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I think it really helps with the way the whole kind of sequence of events here.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So I think I'm going to change the title of this podcast to about trade secrets, because that is fascinating. But as we kind of land the plane, if someone does use a form of IP protection, I know we just said all four or five, but do you feel like then they do have a little bit of courage to keep moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you always have to assess what it is that they've created to figure out, okay, what is the best way to protect this, right? Because the thing is here too, to just bring it back to, you know, the original focus of today's talk about, we don't even realize we have IP. A lot of times, maybe one idea could be protected with multiple forms of IP. So that's also something to consider too, because maybe you need a patent and a trademark, right? So there's always kind of multiple things that you're balancing as well too.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, we're going to interview a young lady in the near future. She's a songwriter. Her name's Emily. She's friends with Evan Ryan. That's how I met her. But she says that even in her songwriting, you know, she'll be practicing with a drummer and a guitarist that she doesn't even know them, because they just are like kind of filling in. And here she's trusting them with her song,
mm-hmm.
you know, and lyrics. And so this is IP, like song lyrics, melodies. I mean, you've seen it happen where, who was it years ago? It was Vanilla Ice stole, or got busted for David Bowie's line from like Ice Ice Baby or something like that, you know, like, but I mean, even a beat, you know, even melodies, even song lyrics. I mean, I think our audience today is going to be mind blown that that's really all IP.
Right. And, you know, we're seeing this more and more frequently too, all these plagiarism lawsuits over song lyrics. It's happening all the time now too.
It's true. So folks, we want Katie and I mean, the whole reason we're doing this podcast and the book is we believe if entrepreneurs have that fence around their IP at whatever thickness, whatever height, as long as they have a fence around it and can keep moving forward, that the world will change. And so if you found this episode valuable, go back and listen to the ones you missed, subscribe, share it, and let us know. We read all the reviews. And Katie, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.